based on just sort of projecting from the numbers that were run in Seattle, where 100,000 people getting a raise, it was estimated that it would be an injection of about $600 million into Seattle's local economy. So we're talking about 600,000 people here in Oregon. So we're looking at potentially billions of dollars injected into Oregon's economy as a result of 15.
So these are people that are... Well, they're coming off food stamps and other government assistance. They can turn around and spend their paycheck at the grocery store and then take their families out, you know, go shopping a little bit, buy some new school clothes or whatever.
Right. Well, and not to mention, too, the fact that, in the service industry, in these low-wage industries in particular, employee turnover is a huge cost for these companies, because it's just sort of like a turnstile of employees. You know, people don't stay very long, but, you know, maybe you get a better job and so you quit, or you just don't have a whole lot of loyalty to the company because you don't make anything. And so when we see that when wages get raised, that changes. Employees are happier at their jobs. They're more loyal to the companies that they work at, and they're more likely to stay. And that saves these employers a significant amount of money. So there really are very, very tangible benefits to higher wages and particularly a higher minimum wage for these companies.
Yeah, that I have a friend who just recently, he's a manager, a night manager at a local grocery store. And it's very stressful. Anybody who's ever had bad customer service, I would say, well, customer service is a skilled job. It does require a certain skill set that not just anybody has. And my friend couldn't take the stress of a day. And after working this place a year and a half, and he walked out. He was so, at his wit's end. He's a student, he's trying to juggle a lot. And, another friend, tells him, hey, don't worry, man, you're a manager. You're making low, almost minimum wage. You can get another minimum wage job. No problem. And it's really, it's tough. I work at the Oregon Zoo, and I have a lot of pride in that workplace. And when I see people that are working hard, that are really struggling at this very successful place, and they love the zoo, and they want to kind of feel that in return a little bit. And it's very challenging.
Sure.
So... Fernando just walked in the door, and I guess this is a good time to say that you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. This is Labor Radio. We're talking to Justin Norton-Kurtzen, an organizer with 15 Now Portland, and co-host Fernando Gappison just made it in from a long road trip. Fernando, it's good to see you.
Thank you.
Hey, Fernando.
Hey, Justin.
So you had some things that you wanted to address on this issue too, right?
Well, have we had a chance to talk about 15 Now?
Well, yes. This is what we've been talking about. Basically, who low-wage workers are, the history of the movement, and kind of talking about the nature of the low-wage economy. So a scary number I read was it's projected that by 2020. 48% of jobs will be in the service sector. That in the recession, 60% of jobs lost were middle-income jobs, and 59% of new positions are low-wage positions. This is a new reality for a lot of people, and as more people, hardworking people, see that they're doing what they've been told is, you get a good job, you can have a family, you can have a house, you can live the American dream, and then they think they're on that path, and the rug kind of gets yanked out from under them, and the social service net is frayed. We also talked a bit about with the relationship, how 15 came out of the Occupy movement. I know you're particularly interested in the relation to unions, and we haven't touched a whole lot upon that yet, Fernando.
Well, I was just wondering, Justin, is that historically unions have believed that they were the ones that had to provide wage increases and benefits. What happens to that notion if they have you know, in the form of labor community coalitions. What happens if unions aren't able to get those things, and what role does 15 now play in maintaining the relationship with unions?
Sure. Well, I mean, I wholeheartedly believe that, you know, being part of a union is still a working person's best bet when it comes to having the power to fight for increased wages and better working conditions and just, you know, better life conditions in general.
Amen to that.
The unions still provide the best vehicle for that in collective bargaining. But that being said, Ann and I were talking about earlier in the show, you know, unions have been pretty well beaten up over the last few decades. And, you know, there have been a lot of attacks on unions that have worked, weakened them and weakened the working class. And so we have started seeing these sort of alliances between unions and community groups. And I think it's been really successful so far. I mean, we see it all throughout the fight for 15 and the 15 movement. And even here in Portland, AFSCME had us and Jobs with Justice come in on the last day of one of their bargaining sessions for Metro temp workers. A representative from us and Jobs with Justice went in and we sat down at the table and introduced ourselves and, you know, let them know that the community was watching the process and watching the bargaining. After months of really no movement, Metro came back and had, you know, like $4 raises for these workers, all of them over $15 an hour. And so I think that, community groups can really play a huge role in helping to strengthen the working class and helping to strengthen the labor movement where it's been beaten up for so long. And if unions are open to it and if community groups are open to it and really work together on the ground, it can really do a lot to help bolster the movement and help win real gains for working people.
So the demand, so legislation for 15 now and things like single-payer health care can help strengthen the union movement. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many issues like that are all related. The wage issues and universal health care and scheduling issues is a huge one. In terms of people's ability to actually have a high quality of life and be able to spend time with their kids and be part of their kids' education and have a family life outside of work. All of these are all areas that working people have been beaten up over the decades. We need to be coming together and we need to be forming alliances wherever we can, not just to save what we still have, but to really start going on the offensive and start fighting back against the onslaught that has really weakened the working class over the decades.
And I suppose that by unions supporting things like 15 now and single payer health care, that unions can be seen as a broader force for democracy and social justice.
Absolutely. I think one of the unfortunate things that has helped weaken unions is that the right has been successful at portraying unions as these groups that are really only looking out for their own members and are only interested in helping their own members. And particularly with things like the fight for 15, we're really starting to see something different out of labor unions. Here in Oregon, we've got all this anti-worker legislation, so-called right to work stuff that's going to be coming down in 2016. And I really think that there's no better way to combat that and really go on the offensive against it than for unions to take up something like the fight for 15 in the union, just because it shows that unions are fighting for everybody in the state, for all working people, not just for their members. And if people see unions as a force that is working for all working people, is fighting for all working people, then they're going to be way less likely to vote for legislation that's going to weaken union power.
I'm right now, I know that there's legislation to increase the minimum wage. Some businesses are claiming that this will, they'll have to increase prices and cut jobs in order to pay $15 an hour. What do you think about that?
Yeah, we hear this a lot. And it's sort of the common argument that's used whenever people try and raise the minimum wage. But it's, you know, it's really sort of basic economics that when more people have more money to spend, that's good for business, right? When because people spend that money right back into the economy, so the money circulates, and you know every employee, every business's employee is another business's customer, and so when wages go up, those employees go and they shop at other businesses. And so businesses really see the benefit of it. And we see it all over the place, right? I mean, Seattle is already phasing into a $15 minimum wage. They're up to $11 an hour now. And since they started this phase in to 15, their minimum wage has gone down, right? It's down to 4.3%. And in King County around Seattle, it's down to 3.3%. It's like 1 or 2 points below the national rate. So the idea that minimum wage increases and even big minimum wage increases is going to be bad for business. When you actually look at real minimum wage increases, the evidence just isn't there.
You know, it's been pointed out that Oregon is the number one place for corporations, and that 70% of the corporations in Oregon only pay $150 in taxes. That really would grade against the argument that Oregon is not friendly towards corporations. I was wondering, where is the legislation for 15 now? Where is it at? And what can people do to support the struggle to increase the minimum wage?
Sure. Well, as of now, the news out of the Capitol is that none of the bills to raise the minimum wage, and there were a number of them that would have raised it anywhere from like 10.75 to 15. None of them were able to get enough support to get out of the rules committees. And so now in the Oregonian today, actually, there was an article printed says that Tina Kotek has a new bill that she's going to introduce and that she feels can get enough traction to pass this session. She hasn't said exactly what the dollar amount is, but she said that, it was basically stated that, Oregon would come out with the highest minimum wage in the country, and that it would also include a repeal of the minimum wage preemption law, which is the law that prevents cities like Portland or Eugene from passing a higher minimum wage. So that's, it looks like the 15 minimum wage bill is dead for the session. Maybe we might get something out of this session, but we'll see. And even if we don't, we've already filed the $15 ballot measure, and that's going full force. We're getting ready to submit our first round of signatures and go into the ballot title certification process. And so really, if people want to get involved, the best thing that you can do is go to our websites, shoot us an email, and come out, have a conversation with us. There's all kinds of things to do to get ready to really push the signature gathering for the ballot measure. We've got a lot of building to do, a lot of events coming up over the summer that we're going to be out at talking to people, and we need all the help we can get.
And that website is 15nowpdx.org?
Yes, exactly.
And then you're on Facebook, too.
Yes, we are.
So the current the ballot measure, people are going to be seeing signature gatherers out there pretty soon. But that one has a 3-year phase-in for small businesses?
Right. It's the same as the bill that was in the state legislature. It's a 3-year phase-in for all businesses, regardless of their size. Right, we would vote in 2016, so it would start. It would start in 2017, and the last phase in would be in 2019.
And it's most businesses are small businesses, but most workers work for larger companies, and
right.
And there's a lot. McDonald's, Subway, Walmart, Sprint call center. These are all Safeway companies that have large percentages of their workforce that are on public assistance, right?
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, sort of to go back to what Fernando was saying about, Oregon really being a very friendly place for corporations, he was right. these big corporations, and most of them out-of-state corporations, they effectively pay the lowest income tax rate in the country here in Oregon. And, you know, these are the same companies that have all of these employees on public assistance. You know, here in Oregon, we pay over $1.7 billion per year in subsidies to help the employees of these companies with food stamps and Oregon Health Plan and Section 8 housing and these other public assistance programs. So, you know, these big corporations, they're paying no taxes. They're getting all of these subsidies, not only for their workers, but then, you know, we look at companies like Nike and Intel that are getting all of these direct tax breaks from the Oregon State Legislature. And really, we start to see a picture where, you know, if people are really concerned about the effects that a big minimum wage increase might have on small businesses, that really it seems like the answer it should be, and the best answer would be, to end the tax breaks for these big corporations, raise the minimum wage so that we're not putting all of this money into subsidies for working people like food stamps and health care, and shift all of that money or a large portion of that money into subsidies for our small businesses so that they can thrive and they can afford to pay higher wages and so that they can actually compete against these big behemoth corporations that are the real job killers, right? I mean, don't get it wrong. It's not higher wages that hurts economies. It's these big companies like Walmart that come in and price out these small companies because they can they pay these low wages and they can offer these way lower prices. And smaller companies can't compete. And that's really what the target needs to be, is going after these big corporations and getting the money out of them and putting them back into our communities.
With the last minute or so that we have, would you like to give a shout out to some of the organizations that people could hook up with or support that are driving the 15 Now campaign?
Yeah, of course, 15 Now. I'll give a shout out to our own organization. But then there are a lot of other great organizations out there. Like Oregon School Employees Association has been a really huge supporter. Labor's Local 483 here in Portland, Portland Jobs with Justice. Don't Shoot Portland and the Black Lives Matter movement have been really instrumental in helping spread the word. And a lot of other groups too, like Our Oregon and SEIU and AFSCME, that are pushing for minimum wage increases and pushing for 15 at the bargaining table all across the state. All of these organizations are doing all kinds of different things that are all contributing to the movement for 15.
Well, we want to thank you, Justin, and we'll be shouting out for you. This is KBOO, Portland, 90.7, Labor Radio. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye. Have a good night.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Cable Community Radio is accepting Toys for a Toy Drive conducted by McLaren's leadership in collaboration with McLaren Community Voice. The toys will be used during family visits for young family members visiting their loved ones in the McLaren Youth Authority. KBOO will have a barrel in their lobby from June 2nd to the 14th and will accept toys, stuffed animals in new or gently used condition. We will not turn down any donations. Your donations will be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime, and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now.